Genesis chapter 1. The last two times I talked, we were going basically verse by verse through the first chapter of Genesis, and we were looking at the creation days and what they meant and all of that good stuff concerning creation. We did a little bit about evolution, the gap theory. Of course, you found out back then that I do not adhere to the gap theory. I do not believe in it. Day-age theory, progressive creationism, all of those theories that are of man that are out there are basically taking evolution and trying to incorporate it into the Bible. So we looked at those a little bit, and then we looked at the days, and we're just going to overview real quick, and then we'll get into the message. We will definitely get over. I will not go over time tonight. My throat is bothering me, so we will bear with me on that. All right, so day one, Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 through 5, we found out that God created matter, space, time, and light for the earth. On day two, we also saw that God created the atmosphere, and that's where he separated the waters above from the waters below. And that's Genesis chapter 1, verses 6 through 8. And then day three, God created dry land and the plants, and that was the last message that I spoke on, and that was verses 9 through 13. And we saw how God is orderly making everything that human beings need. But he's taking his time in making these certain things for his glory so that we can look at those things and we can admire the creator of the creation. Sadly, because of what we're going to find out in Genesis chapter 3, we have gone from worshiping the creator to worshiping the creation of a lot of people. So we're going to look at day 4 tonight. Hopefully we'll get to day 6, but we'll see how time goes. Let's just read the verses. Verses 14 through 19. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw everything, saw that it was good, and so evening and the morning were the fourth day. So let's look at a couple of things. He's talking about these light bearers. If you remember, light has already been created. God has already made light. Now he's made these luminaries that are actually, some of them are generating their own light, and some of them are reflectors of light. But God has created these things to show forth another aspect of this light. And the scriptures say that God himself is light. So these are showing just another glimpse of who this great God is, this creator is. So what was the purpose for the light bearers? And he goes on in the scriptures and it tells us a couple of different reasons. The first one is to separate the day from the night. Serve as signs to give light on the earth, to rule the day and rule the night. And separating day from night or night from day goes back to the aspect of the 24-hour cycle. And it's just showing this separation, this division. Remember, night is not always representing evil. It just means the absence of light. To give light on the earth, plants created on day three. And we know from our science books and our classrooms that plants need light in order to produce their own food, and we need plants so that we can live. So it's just a process that we go through. God is making everything in an orderly fashion. Another aspect is to rule or govern the day and night times. So these are the things, when we think of daylight, we automatically think of the sun rising. This is the focal point of our day. And then at nighttime, we have a focal point, which is the moon. And both of these things, and we'll give you a couple of verses in a little bit, both of these things are reflecting who this creator is, this God of creation. To serve as signs, seasons, days, and years. And this is not to be confused with what we consider the psychic hotlines or astrology. Everybody, I ask you, well, what sign are you? And I'll say, well, I don't know. Born in August, I think that's a Leo. and whatever that means. But this is not the biblical aspect of it. It's not talking about astrology. It's talking about how we get our seasons, how we get our days, how we get our calendar years. This is what it's talking about concerning these two lights. Psalm 89, verse 37 says of the moon, "It is a faithful witness in heaven. And the stars are so numerous, yet God," in Psalm 147, 4 says, "counts the number of the stars and calls them all by name." And if you've ever seen Louis Giglio's movie, I think it's Indescribable. And it shows all of these different aspects of the solar system and how deep, how wide, how vast the glory of God is in everything that He's created. And we're not going to deal with the astronomy part of it because I do not know enough to tell you about it. But watch the video, go on the websites and look at it, and you can find out a whole lot more of what God is. There are so many things that we do not understand about God on this earth. And just imagine these universes that are out there that we don't even know about, and yet they're there. And why are they there? For God's glory. Aliens aren't out there. He didn't make them for other creatures to live on. He made them for His glory and so that we could look at them and see God and admire Him and worship Him. Here is a quote from Henry Morris, and he was one of the founders of modern day creationism. I talked a little bit about him the last time that we were going through this. And he says, this is one of his devotions that he made. "At least we can measure time intervals, seconds, hours, centuries, etc. This is because of God's gracious forethought in providing means for doing this. He was not a blind watchmaker, as some evolutionists have called him. He actually created time in the beginning. Then He set the sun and the moon in the sky and made the earth to assume a global shape and to rotate on an axis, making the measurement of time in days possible. Next, He placed stars in the far heavens in various locations and combinations, and the earth to orbiting around the sun, enabling us to tell how many days make up a year. Then once the earth's rotational axis was tilted, that made seasons measurable. So we can at least identify time durations in days and years with their seasons, and we can subdivide or combine these in whatever ways we find convenient. Minutes, decades, summer, winter, etc." So this is another glimpse of what's going on as far as day four. Another fascinating fact about the moon is this is where we get our tidal waves that are coming in. When you go to the ocean and you see the currents coming in and out, this is what's happening. The gravitational pull from the moon is showing forth God's glory. If you've ever watched that, it's a fascinating sight. We were down there a few weeks ago, I think, and we had our chairs sitting so far up the beach, and every so often we'd have to move the chairs back more and more. And we just had to keep on and keep on until finally the tide stopped and you could see the line. But it was just fascinating to see that God, He controls everything, that gravitational pull. If we didn't have a gravitational pull on this earth, we wouldn't be here. We would be floating off into outer space. So God controls everything. He knows exactly how far the moon is from the earth, how far it needs to be. He knows how far the sun needs to be from the earth. He knows all of these aspects because He created everything and He did it to sustain us. All right, let's look at day five. This is going to be verses 20 through 23. "Then God said, 'Let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens.' So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves with which the waters abounded, according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good, and God blessed them, saying, 'Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply in the earth.' So the evening and the morning were the fifth day." And again, we have reference to the 24-hour cycle. Evening, morning, a number always equals a literal 24-hour day. The first thing that stands out for me is kinds, the word kinds. And I'm going to give you a couple of definitions. And these are from a biblical aspect, from a creationist point of view. Kinds, the definition is a group of organisms who share a genetic relationship through common descent from an organism originally created by God during creation week. So that's to be separated from the evolutionary concept of all of us having an ancestral being that we came from and then we diverged off of the family tree that we went on. So what the biblical concept of kinds is that you have this kind, and this kind, and then there's different variations within that kind, but there's no going from this kind to another kind over millions of years. So it's making a distinction between evolution. Horizontal variation possible within that kind. And if we look around this room, we can see that the human kind, the human beings, we have a lot of variation within our kind. We have gray-haired people, we have short people, we have tall people, we have different statures, we have different builds, we have different nose shapes, eye color, all of these variations, but we're still what? Human. We're still within that kind. Excuse me. We're not going to change into anything else. If you notice that we learned a while back when we were teaching, the angels are a specific kind. When human beings die, we do not get our wings and we do not turn into angelic beings. We are still human beings. We're just going to have our glorified bodies, but we're never going to be angels. Contrary to the evolutionary concept of speciation or vertical change into another kind, and that an example of evolution would be from an amphibian to a mammal or from a reptile to a bird, however you want to look at those, they're saying that if you give something enough time, enough variation, enough mutation, then eventually it can produce a whole different new kind over here that was never like this kind. And what we as biblical creationists say is that can't happen. No matter how many genetics you have, no matter how much time you give it, the genes, the DNA is just not there to produce a whole different kind. It just can't happen. And God didn't make it that way anyway. There's a group of Christians promoting a biblical classification system called baraminology, or the study of created kinds. How many of you, have you ever heard of that before? I was doing a search and I found that one. It's basically taking the concept of kinds and it's breaking it down so that we can look at it. And when I think of the snake kind, well, it's going to break those down. And some snakes might be different. He may have created a couple of different types of snakes. Who knows? Some of them lay eggs. Some of them have live birth. So that's one of the obstacles that we have as creationists. We can't answer everything, but we have a better answer than the evolutionists. And it's a whole lot more convincing to me, considering I used to be an evolutionist. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 39. Let's turn to that real quick. And this is going to reinforce the kind issue. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 39. All flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of animals, another of fish, and another of birds. And then it goes on and talks about the celestial bodies and the terrestrial bodies, and talks about their glory, and it talks about the sun, and it talks about the moon. So it's saying that it's showing a distinction between the kinds. It goes on and it talks about the sun and the moon are two different kinds. They're not the same. It shows the distinction between what God has created. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 1. Usually the speaker is on the spot when he's teaching, and we have to make sure that we know what we're talking about. I'm going to put y'all on the spot, okay? Is that okay? Okay. You're going to say yes, but then you might think no. Okay. Verse 26, then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air. And we're going to look at birds. Let's go back up to verse 21. And it talks about the winged bird according to its kind. Is there a problem with that, saying that it's a winged bird according to its kind? Okay. All right, let's go ahead and address it then. I think there's a problem with it, with the translation. Not with the original, not with what God was speaking of, but with our translation that we have in the English. The Hebrew word translated bird would be better translated flying creatures to include bats, flying insects, and extinct flying reptiles. So does that make sense? If we say birds, then automatically in our English speaking mind, we see hummingbirds, we see cardinals, we see doves, we see eagles, we see birds. And then when we look in different countries, different continents, we see flying animals that are not birds, they're mammals, and they're called bats. Well, it's not a bird, it's a bat. And then we have the extinct reptiles like the pterodactyl, which is supposedly a flying reptile. We're still not sure about that. So we have to deal with those also. So a better rendition of this would be flying creatures instead of birds. And I haven't seen any translation that actually translated it flying creatures. The Hebrew basically means flying creature. I don't know why they specifically mentioned bird, though. Evolutionary thought teaches that life originated out of the water, yet the biblical account of creation says that God created life on specific days, with the sea creatures and birds being created simultaneously. And this is going back to what evolutionary concept teaches, that lower life forms over time, through death, suffering, heartache, pain, mutates, changes, evolves, and eventually produces higher life forms, which is totally contrary to what the Bible is talking about. And that's why we as Christians, we need to make sure that we're taking the Bible first and letting science be interpreted through the Bible. Evolution has no place within the Christian home. It has no place within the Christian thought process. It does nothing for us in our relationship with Jesus Christ. If anything, it pulls us away, because it says, if there is a God, you don't need Him. And this goes back to some great Christians who have walked away from the faith because of evolutionary teaching. So we need to make sure that we're grounded in the biblical creation point of view. So the sea creatures, what would they incorporate? They would incorporate the whales, large-sized dinosaur creatures, some of the reptiles, which are water-based reptiles. Some of the reptiles are land-based, and we're going to read about that in a little bit. All different types of creatures that are out there, some of them we have never seen before because they've gone extinct long before we ever lived. So we see all of these things. We see the fossil record. We see every aspect of what God has done. All of it we don't fully understand, and yet God has done it. He's made it. He's left it here for a reason, and the reason we're going to find out in a little bit is to glorify Him. All right, let's look at day 6, verses 24 through 27. Then God said, Let the earth bring forth the living creatures according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beasts of the earth, each according to its kind, and it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. And we're going to stop right there, because I'm not going to go into man's creation yet, because there's a lot of stuff that we have to deal with as far as not just Genesis 1, but also Genesis chapter 2. So we won't get into that yet, but let's just look at some of the animals that were created. Talks about the cattle, or what we know as the livestock. This would entail the sheep, cattle, horses. Basically what we understand as livestock today would be considered the same thing as in the creation model. And then it talks about the beasts of the field. This would be considered what we know as African jungle wild animals. That would be in that category. And then the things that creep upon the earth. What would be some of those? Go ahead. He's going to name all of them for me. I have to hold off. Snakes, lizards, frogs, toads. Now, frogs would be one of those things that I would be iffy on. I don't know why. Why? What would make somebody be iffy on a frog? They have birth, or they produce in water. But then we have those that don't produce in water. They actually have their babies, and they put them on their back, and they carry them around. So we have all of these things that are out there. You didn't know that the creation was so fascinating, did you? But it is. So we have all of these things that we don't fully understand. Sea turtles, they live in the water, but they come to land to lay their eggs. Some of the sea snakes, they come to water to lay their eggs. Some of the sea snakes stay out in the water all their lives, and they have live birth out in the ocean. Some fish have live birth. Some fish lay eggs. We have all of these things. I think God just likes to throw a monkey wrench to make us keep on saying, God, I can't answer it, but you can. Ken Ham likes to use, because he's from Australia, he likes to use the platypus. It has a bill like a duck. It has spurs like a chicken, but they have venom in them like a snake. It lays eggs, but the eggs hatch, the babies crawl up, and they suck milk from the mother. Confusing animal. Can't explain it, but God made it, and we have to admire it. So let's look at it. Basically, what he's saying is the animals that are living on the land, this is what God has created at this time. And he created them for a purpose, and it says that man is to rule over them. This was the purpose of all of creation, for man to subdue it, for man to work it, for man to have dominion over all of it. And of course, we know today that something took place. This is the first mention of a Hebrew word, and it's speaking of living. And it goes back to verse 24, the living creatures. It can sometimes be translated living souls, and the Hebrew is nefesh. And it basically means the soul, the life, the self, the inner being of the animal or the person. And this is the part of the body that houses the emotions or the personality. Soul is to be distinct and separate from the spirit. And we'll find out what the spirit is next time we get into this lesson. And there's only one created being on this earth that has a spirit. And what would that be? Man. God is making sure that we are clear in our understanding that man is to be separate, distinct, totally contrary to what the animals are. So when we lower ourselves down to evolutionary thought and we say, well, we're just animals evolving and eventually we'll get better, we are demeaning the creation of God, because God says that we are not animals. We're nowhere close to being animals. Sometimes we may act like animals because of our fallen nature, but we are not animals. We need to be making sure that we are distinct from them. But what about this word nefesh, this living creature, this soul, this self, this life? How many of you have pets, specifically cats and dogs? Do they have a personality? They do. Sometimes you'll find an animal or a dog or a cat that's real affectionate, always wants to be beside of you, just real happy when you come in the door. And then you have a cat or a dog that just can't stand to look at you unless you're handing food into their bowl. So they have a personality. They have emotions. Sometimes you can tell they're happy. Sometimes you can tell they're sad. Some dogs, they're always happy. Some cats, they're always sad. They're always mean. We have a Siamese mix, and she's one of those. Sometimes she'll crawl up in your lap. She's the sweetest thing. And then sometimes she'll get up there and she'll bite the mess out of it. You just never know. I think you came over one time. She bit you on your leg, I think. That's just the way she is. She's got a personality. So we need to understand that animals are here for a purpose. They're here to show forth the glory of God. Animals have a soul. They have a personality. We have a soul, we have a personality, but we are to be distinct and separate. We should never be associated with the animals. What was that, the Jungle Book song? Look like the animals, talk like the animals. Again, you might do that, but is that what you are? I'm not an animal. And if we think about our public school system, day after day, our children are being taught that. You're nothing but an animal. You're nothing but an animal. And what's that doing to our mentality? It's telling us that we're animals. It's showing us throughout all of our aspects of our lives, you're nothing but an animal, and you start to act like an animal. And then when we start to act like an animal, people say, well, can you start acting like a human being? Well, we've been trained in our minds to start acting like an animal. Evolution says there is no God, there is no right and wrong. Whatever you think in your mind, that's what's right for you. You determine your own relative morality, and that's how life's going to be. And then when you walk up to somebody and you hit them, or you curse at them, or you take something that's theirs and it's not yours, they really don't have any basis to say, you can't do that. By what law are you governing us? By the laws of the land? Well, the laws of the land change. And we'll find out that God has a pattern for everything. And we can either go through evolutionary teaching, or we can accept what the biblical basis is. And for me, I think the biblical basis is a whole lot better. Another question. When animals die, do they go to heaven? I can't find it in Scripture, so I don't know if they do or not. I know during the millennium there's going to be animals there. The reason why I ask that, because this is going to go back to that aspect of the Spirit. God came in the likeness of man through the person of Jesus Christ, and He was born of the Holy Spirit. God is a Spirit. God deals with us in the spiritual realm. When we're born again, we're born of the Spirit. Our old man is dead. Our new man is brought forth to new life in Christ. So the spiritual man is inside of us. We still have our emotions. We still have our will. We still have all of our personality. Some of that's good, some of that's bad, but we have that to deal with. Animals have everything that we have is concerning the soul, but animals don't get saved. Animals do not get born again. The reason why I'm saying that is because we look at people and we see how they have changed in their mentality. Abortion, everybody wants to have abortion legalized. But if you go and hurt a poor defenseless puppy, you're going to jail. I mean, they're going to try and prosecute you to the highest degree. So now we've taken human beings, they're nothing. And we're taking animals and we're elevating them more than the Creator. We're worshiping the creation. So we see what's taking place. And the question is, why is that? Why are we doing these things? And I'm not going to tell you yet because we haven't gotten to chapter 3. All right, we're going to stop right there. And we'll finish up where we'll actually get into day 6 with the pinnacle of God's creation, which is humanity. Don't boast about yourself. Don't think that you're better than you are. But God saved the best for last. He had a purpose for us. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more. Let's go. Look, I got two columns right here. The evolutionary thought and then the creation thought. Evolution says that the sun and star existed before Earth. The creation thought says that Earth was created before the sun and the stars. Evolution, the sun is Earth's first light. And creation says light on Earth before sun. Evolution says first life was marine organisms. Creation says first life was land plants. And this is not to be confused with the nephesh or the soul of the inside of the animal. Plants do not have a soul. I've never had a plant rub on me, try and lick me or anything else. Now, sometimes you can get poison ivy, and you can consider that licking on you. But they don't talk to you. They don't have any emotions. You can mow the grass, and it doesn't say, ouch, that hurts or anything. It just comes back the next day, and it looks like in 2 days you got to mow it again. That's grass. That's plants. They have no soul. They have no spirit. We don't have to worry about if they die, yank it up, plant another one. It was made for a purpose. It was made for food. And that's, and of course, we can look at it and see the beauty of it as well. Reptiles predate birds. That's the evolutionary teaching. And creation says that birds predate land reptiles, not to be confused with water reptiles. Evolution says that land mammals predate whales. Creation says that whales predate land mammals. If you know anything about evolution, it says that whales were land animals, and over millions of years, they crawled back into the ocean, and there they are. Evolution says that humans lived, or we should say human-like creatures lived and died before Adam. And the creation teaching says that Adam was the first man, and death followed his sin. So that is day 4 and day 5 and day 6, half of day 6 anyway. And we'll finish the rest next time I'm allowed to teach.